Nothing like a good pre-show sneeze to clear your head out. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this 15th day of September. It is Wednesday. Very nice to have you with us. And we have a lot to talk about, a lot of news going on. And I don't know if you're like me. I was up late watching the returns from California, which I wasn't up as late as I thought I was going to be up. So that was good news. But we do have a lot to talk about. We have a wonderful panel to do it with, and we of course welcome you to join us. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me welcome the panel. I'll do it quickly because I think I may have to sneeze again. Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. I'm okay. The problem, of course, is that my enemies by the thousands are out there. We call them mosquitoes.
Yes.
And
the hordes.
I've never seen anything like it. I just have never seen anything like it. This is one of the worst years. Of course, there was a lot of water, and as a result, we have a lot of mosquitoes, and they are our enemies.
Now,
I'm going to get mail, Joe, and the people are going to say they were here before you were, and they have a right. They have a right to be, you know, here, which is a basic fundamental disagreement I have with people who write letters like that.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of places I could go with this. One is, I was thinking, because we were having a conversation in our house about crickets. And the conversation in our house is that the crickets are annoying and have to go. I was brought up in a house where you didn't kill anything, number one. But number two, crickets were good luck. And by God, we had just enough superstition in our lives that you did not kill a cricket. That was really bad luck. So not only were you destroying the life of the cricket, you were also, you know, spelling doom for the rest of your life if you were to do so. But for mosquitoes, I'm with you. It seems like in the early morning hours and the late evening hours, it is barely, you can't stand outside for 4 minutes while your dog pees without just coming back like a pincushion.
Right. And as gardeners we are facing, you know, this is very difficult. But of course there was Jiminy, and that's a whole different story.
Jiminy, you know. And what was the cricket?
Always let your conscience be your guide.
And then there was the cricket in Times Square. Which was a George Selden book that I grew up with as a child. So yes, crickets always had a very good place in my heart. But you know, the other gross thing about it is if you're getting hit by a mosquito, and then you swat it, and then just this little explosion of blood comes, and it's really disgusting.
That means they got you.
Yeah.
That's what it means. Now,
really
sometimes
bad.
You can hear the zzzz, and then you slap your ear or somewhere around that. You knock out your ear. No, you don't really knock out your eardrum. But you kill the mosquito.
Yeah.
And you kill the mosquito, and sometimes you get them before the blood, sometimes not.
Sometimes when your conscience is your guide, it's telling you to kill the mosquito.
You know, I have no issue with killing those mosquitoes. And for all of you people who are going to write me letters saying they were here before you were, just save it.
I believe that about deer. I believe that about bears. I believe that about birds. I don't know about the mosquitoes.
Yeah, the difference.
Bob Griffin is with us. I can't wait to hear what he has to say about all this. He's the dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness. Are we prepared for the mosquitoes, Bob?
I did not want to get involved in the middle of that conversation. it was stunning radio, though. I'm sure there's an award out there for that one.
Well, that's what we try for every day here on the program.
Hey, Joe, if I could just real quick, I just want to wish all of our Jewish listeners a blessed and safe Yom Kippur today.
Yes, thank you. That doesn't apply to me, but Alan.
Yes, and thank you.
It's
a very serious holiday. It is the serious holiday.
Bob, thank you very much for being with us. I didn't read your full title, Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, so we welcome you to the program. Rosemary Armeo is an investigative journalist. Good morning. And also a adjunct professor at said University at Albany. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. How do we feel about dead squirrels this morning? A local cat brought a baby squirrel in its mouth. my door today. Why are there baby squirrels in September?
I don't know. I've been seeing a lot of baby deer, too. I don't know. And little baby turkeys, too. It's a very good question. I assume it's, you know, you get it when you can. Is my guess. But I'm sorry you had to deal with that. That's I assume the squirrel was gone by the time it arrived at your doorstep.
Well, it's mostly gone, which is even more horrible.
Yes, that is horrible. Judy Patrick, good morning. aren't you glad you said yes to this invitation?
This conversation is making me dizzy, I think. In a slower news environment, I think the proliferation of mosquitoes probably would prompt a lot of stories about West Nile virus.
Yes.
But we're not seeing that. I'm telling you that I'm so old now that the mosquitoes don't bite me. My skin must be too leathery and tough or something. I don't get bit. So Alan must be far younger than I.
You know, okay.
Wait, I demand the right of reply.
Yeah, go ahead and reply.
No, I am not younger than you, and you know it, and you're just playing with me. Nevertheless, I do think that mosquitoes are very, very bad, and I'm sticking with that.
But to Judy's point of not getting hit by them, my father-in-law, who you know, Judy, is can sit out there for 3 hours and not get bit. I don't know why that is. I have no idea. I think you have that Greenwich skin.
That's right.
I don't know what it is. It's the water. It could be the PCBs from the river. I don't know what it is, but it's good for you. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. We have a lot to talk about. Of course, it was a big night in the state of California and the run-up to yesterday's recall election in California. Both Gavin Newsom and his critics framed it as a judgment on his handling of the pandemic. Newsom embraced his enactment of aggressive mask and vaccine mandates. His leading Republican opponent, one Larry Elder, promised to cancel those mandates before drinking his first cup of tea on his first day in office. So yesterday, it was a landslide. Newsom won that referendum. According to the latest results, California voters rejected removing him from office by a margin of 64% to 36%. Those numbers will change, but only slightly. And any way you look at it, it's a blowout. The final margin may change as the count continues, but clearly a political victory, not only for Newsom, but maybe for vaccination and maybe for what he has been saying. And who knows, maybe even for the Democrats who are fighting similar issues across this country. Alan Chartok, we'll begin with you.
Well, let me just say, you know, it was an outstanding victory for Newsom. And I think, as I said yesterday, the Democrats saw it coming. Biden got out there. He knew what was going to happen, as did Harris, the vice president. Nevertheless, I don't think it's the most important story we're facing. I think a more important story is what General Milley is now saying in Woodward's new book, in which he thinks that the American democracy was under assault, pardon me, and that there was going to be an attempt to overthrow the election by by getting into a war.
Have you spurred my first topic?
No,
do I have to replan things?
I've never seen anything like this in the American history. I don't think we have ever seen somebody. He goes to Pence, who turns out to be just as worthless as so many of us always thought he was. Pence gets on the call with Quayle. Quayle tells him basically to cut it out. Who thought Quayle was a hero? And that things were not bad in Arizona, and that they were making it up, and that was the end of that. You know, just when you think maybe Pence had something to him when they were chasing him around the Capitol, it turns out it's not true. Bad news. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. So now I don't know if we want to go with the Newsom story or we want to go with the Milley story.
Hey, it's your show, and you are the boss.
Clearly.
And you are the boss.
I don't know. Hey, Bob, which one of those do you want to talk about?
So I can merge both, actually, Joe. I, as much as we want to talk about the Newsom recall as being about COVID, and I do think it played part of a role, I think this was also an election about Trump in Trumpism and in what is going on in Texas, which, again, I think ties back to the insurrection and in the general's concern about the overall democracy. I think this was an important election that a lot of folks will say, well, it's a deep blue California. We were talking just a couple of weeks ago about how tight this was and the concern right. about what kind of message this would be sending, not only for this election, but for 2022. And the people in California came out very, very strongly. And I think it's more to do with making sure that Trumpism and sort of the stain that folks are seeing in places like Texas and Florida didn't go into California.
And didn't it also, don't you think, Rosemary, that it also, they couldn't even, the margin was so huge that the argument of the fact that it was a rigged election just evaporated. I mean, even Elder had to concede because it was just silly otherwise.
Yeah, it was the same sort of thing we heard during the Trump-Biden election, that the margin had to be big so that claims of rigging the election would not be valid. And that actually happened here, which is good. On that story, to continue what we talked about a little bit yesterday, that it was held is the serious problem to me. That was in a very expensive challenge in a state that has some real problems, and a waste of time to go through that whole election fiasco. And they could do it again, to get more signatures and start it again. So now we're going to see a tussle in California to pass a law to recall the recall, if you will. Which is probably a good thing. It will be yes. heavily disputed by Republicans. I think you'll see other red states trying to emulate California in the same way they're emulating Texas. But can I say that in addition to the Milley story, which I agree with Alan is the real prominent one today, I would like to see us talk about the mute button controversy. Do you know about that?
Remind me.
Say again?
In the middle of a...
Go ahead, Rosemary.
In the middle of a hearing yesterday about Afghanistan, the Secretary of State was questioned about who in the White House controls the button that is pressed to cut off Biden whenever he starts to go off the rails. So, in other words, in what should have been a discussion that rightly about his apparent mishandling of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, we got into a discussion that's completely misinformation about Biden's senility. And the Secretary of State just kind of said, I don't know what you're talking about, sir. But it went on, and it was covered by CNN and by the Washington Post today.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful illustration of how misinformation is hatched. This came from the Republican National Committee and then was spread in the middle of a nationally covered congressional hearing on something that truly was important. We go off on this. Just I don't know what to call it because it's a rumor. It's just a malicious, horrible, a little seed of untruth. And now it will get bigger. And I think people should take a look at it because it's really informative about how it happens.
I'll quickly, we can talk about it after the other side of the break. But James Risch is the senator from Idaho, a Republican. He is a senior Republican in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And while questioning Secretary of State Antony Blinken, he said, quote, "It's been widely reported that somebody has the ability to push the button and cut off his sound and stop him from speaking. Who is that person?" First of all, we don't know that it's been widely reported. And second of all, wouldn't we notice if we don't hear something and we see somebody's lips moving? Just asking that as a rhetorical question. Judy Patrick, you can respond to any of the stories that have been brought up.
On Newsom, I think Republicans shouldn't be patting themselves so much on the back this morning. And I think this was should have been a cakewalk. And 64% does seem like an overwhelming win for Newsom. But, given what he was up against, I would have wished for an even higher margin of victory for him. It seemed like a $276 million the state of California yeah. spent on a circus. And, you know, Newsom had to spend $50 million of campaign money on it. And, you know, for every... when you spend campaign money, you take campaign contributions, which makes you beholden to people. So I don't like it when political politicians spend campaign money. I wish they didn't. He didn't have to spend that money or raise that money. So I just wish. I think there are some serious messages that come across from this election, but Newsom didn't have a really formidable candidate. Larry, and in other states and other issues, it's not going to be as much of a cakewalk as this one was.
I didn't see, I don't know if anyone else saw, but when I went to bed, how many people were running? 46, I think. Was that the number?
46.
Yeah. 46 people yeah. were running. And the number I saw out of that 46, I think he had just above 40% of the people. So there were two questions, yes or no. And the second question only applies if Newsom were to be recalled. But those answers, so of the 2 or 3 million people who voted to have the governor recalled, of that number, that's, you know, 3 million people were the ones who came up with that. And Larry Elder had, I think, just around 40% of that. But to your point, Judy, that it's not exactly, you know, strong numbers if you're going to go take on and have a political future, which Larry Elder seemed to indicate in his concession. I use that term somewhat loosely, a concession speech. Last night, so yep. we'll see.
But
what
remember,
his...
Joe, that 40% is of a much smaller number. That
right
part of the
3 million.
Is,
I mean, yeah. of what right. was it? However many people voted yesterday, yeah, it's a huge number. It was so it is definitely a distillation.
Yes. Well, yes, and the other part of this that we're not talking about are the numbers of voters that voted by simply taking an envelope and putting it into, because everybody got a ballot, and putting it into the mail. That's the last thing the Republicans want to see happening in American politics, because you know, there are more Democrats. It's that simple.
Right.
And we saw it here. And Elder was a terrible candidate. He really was. But the fact that people were so scared and worried about it just is so interesting.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll return. We have a lot of letters. We will get to yours. We'll get to you to the letters that you've written. We won't get to all the letters, but we'll get to some of the letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We would love to hear from you. Also, we will continue our conversation on the many conversations here with Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and Bob Griffin. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and Bob Griffin. So kudos to Bob Woodward, really. The new book is Peril. It is by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa. And it comes out, I believe, next Tuesday. And the book is already starting to make the press rounds. And there is much information that is being released in early copies of the book that is making news, as Alan mentioned a moment ago. The top headline grabber is the fact that there were two secret phone calls that General Mark Milley, who yesterday in a press release, the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, referred to as a, quote, dumbass, said that the so Milley, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, assured his Chinese counterpart, General Li of the People's Liberation Army, that the United States would not strike, according to the new book. One call took place on October 30th, 4 days before the election that unseated President Donald Trump, and the other on January 8th, 2 days after the Capitol siege carried out his supporters. The first call was prompted by Milley's review of intelligence suggesting that the Chinese believed that the U.S. was preparing to attack. That belief, the authors write, was based on tensions over military exercises in the South China Sea and deepened by Trump's belligerent rhetoric toward China. General Lee, I want to assure you that the American government is stable and everything is going to be okay, Milley told him. We are not going to attack or conduct any kinetic operations against you. In the book's account, Milley went so far as to pledge he would alert his counterpart in the event of a U.S. attack, stressing the rapport they'd established through a back channel. General Lee, you and I have known each other for now 5 years. If we're going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. It's not going to be a surprise. Lee did take the chairman at his words, according to the authors of the book. It is the second phone call that went a little not as well. Placed to address Chinese fears about the events of January 6th. Lee was not easily assuaged, even after Milley promised him, we are 100% steady, everything's fine, but democracy can be sloppy sometimes. oh, the lipstick on that pig. The other thing that I would like to, while we're talking about this, that I thought was just extraordinary was the conversation that Milley also had with the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. The authors obtained a transcript of the call and Pelosi telling Milley, referring to Trump, he's crazy. You know he's crazy. He's crazy. And what he did yesterday, meaning January 6th, is further evidence of his craziness. Milley replied, I agree with you on everything. Alan. All right.
Well, no, there I'm you here. Go. Okay. I'm here. It's always this mute thing. Yes, I tell you, first of all, Pelosi is just such a heroine. And I just hope she changes her mind about retiring at the end of this. Because she has more guts in her finger than most politicians ever do. She faced up to the president, the ex-president said all roads lead to Putin with you, and that was true, and the fact that she's there. But this is a real conundrum if you think about it. I mean, the idea, we've always believed in civilian control of the military. And here many of us are applauding Milley, I'm one of them, for having said, no, we're not going to allow you to manipulate, you know, the election returns by firing off a nuke or even starting a war. That is an extraordinary time in our history. And it also raises the question, I'm going to be fascinated to hear what the others have to say about this, raising the question of the principle that the executive controls the military. Because believe me, it could be the other way around, and that would be even worse. What if General MacArthur, for example, had been allowed to, arm his people with nukes, and we had them, and go into China or go into Russia? He didn't. He wasn't allowed to do that. And it cost Harry Truman an awful lot of popularity. So it's a fascinating setup.
Bob Griffin, in this article and the releases from the book, they report that Milley's resolve was deepened by the events of June 1st, 2020, when he felt Trump had used him as part of a photo op in his walk across Lafayette Square during protests that began after the killing of George Floyd. The chairman came to see his role as ensuring that, quote, we're not going to turn our guns on the American people and we're not going to have a wag the dog scenario overseas. Milley at one point did become alarmed, saying this is a highly dangerous situation. We are not going to lash out for, he says, what are we going to lash out for his ego?
Yeah, Joe. I mean, there's so much to unpack with this. You know, it seems like everybody in the world, with the exception of the Trump supporters, saw the insurrection on January 6th for what it was. And the instability that it showed both to us in this country, but to everybody around the world, I think basically shook all of the governments to its core, because even the Chinese that are not our friends depend on a certain level of stability in the American form of government. And that was stripped away from us on January 6th. I to this day, and will continue to say that I hope that criminal charges are brought up against Donald J. Trump and that he is forever forbidden from running for office again. I think he is a clear and present danger to the future of democracy. And honestly, Joe, I don't understand how anyone can support him who supports either the rule of law or the military, although you see all sort of the jingoistic garbage that comes out of some of his supporters. You know, Alan, you raised some really complex and difficult questions, right? Because there has to be a balance of power, and you never want the executive to be able to act unilaterally. That's why there should be a requirement of congressional at least approval or consent in order to go to war. The concern you have, though, is that you also need an executive that can allow the military to move quickly as a deterrence, you know, in case we're viewed as we're facing, you know, a first strike capability. So you don't want to bog them down. But at the same time, I think we had a better practice when civilian control of the military included that no generals or admirals or flag officers could be Secretary of State, that they had you had to be a civilian. And I think we need to go back to that.
So much of that depends, though, on the character of the people involved. I mean, you can have a constitutional arrangement of who has power over whom. But the real problem is if you have a Donald J. Trump as president, that could change everything, as opposed to a Milley who turns out to be an American hero.
Yeah, the fish rots from the head, right, Alan? I've heard you say that many, many times.
Well,
it
usually rots from the head.
This is an example. It's also an example of, and I hope people don't lose sight of this, of our civil servants, and this includes the general, who put themselves and their careers on the line to uphold their oath to office and to this country. And I know it's great sport in this country to malign government employees and government workers. But this is a prime example of why character matters, but also the sacrifice that other Americans are willing to make in order to make sure that we are all safe.
Yep.
Rosemary,
you
Mayo.
Want to hear another view?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I actually think that Trump and Rubio are right about this general. He was a dumbass, or he would never have appeared at that publicity stunt. And I think he's been trying to make up for that ever since. And Rubio is right. If we had been to war, whether the reason was good or not, if America was at war with China and he was warning them, that is an act of treason. I agree with him on that. And what this really has exposed is that our laws are governing the relationship between government, civilian government, and military need to be fixed. And we knew this, and nothing has happened about it. Trump, as president, had sole power to unleash nuclear power. And that's not changed. Biden has it now. So we like his character better, so suddenly it's okay? I don't think so. It should be harder to start a war. It should be harder to launch a nuclear weapon. And Congress has done nothing to fix that. I think that's really what's at stake here. And I see a whole lot of this. How did Woodward get this access to Milley? I think he totally has been out to improve his reputation since that baloney with the Bible and the demonstration and the George Floyd. And this is not good. There's no way that this is a good action where you disagree with the president, you disagree with his state of mind. We have the 25th Amendment on that, which we also did not use, and it needs to be shorn up too. That's how you get rid of a president with bad character and instability, not by having the generals go behind their back. I think this is incredibly dangerous.
It seems, go ahead.
But Rosemary, I have a question for you. So if a general learns that a president, in order to foster his own power, is going to potentially send a nuke, and you are quite right that we have, and I raised this before, we have an arrangement of powers, but don't you think that Milley was wrong to do what he did?
I think it was arguably an act of treason. Your government, had the circumstances come about, we're at war with China, and it may be indeed that it's because Trump just wanted to, he's nuts and unstable and all the bad reasons that we've talked about. But we are at war. That is an official American position. And our general is calling the enemy and saying, we're about to attack you, ruining surprise or whatever it is. That is, on the face of it, treason. And, reasons, I get it. We've been talking about that. And those need to be fixed. But to make Milley a hero and say this is all Trump, that's really not a good position.
Bob?
Yeah, but in order to be at war, Rosemary, by our Constitution, it would have had to go before Congress, and the Congress would have had to vote. So it's not a surprise. What Milley said was that we weren't going to launch a preemptive strike. All right, but if it was a war that was declared legally, then he would have fought it. And I also push back with you about Milley's role on the walk across. He was ordered to do so, and from everything that I have read, is that he was taken by surprise from that. But he's not going to buck his commander in chief in front of everybody and say, no, I'm not walking with you. So I'm sorry. I think you're way off base on this.
Well, okay, why was he in uniform? Why was he in a military uniform in the middle of a protest?
Okay.
I just don't think he's a hero. I understand your point. I'm not trying to be, completely a jerk about this, but I think that the attention that this is bringing ought to bring about changes in our law, not in more yelling about how bad Trump was.
Judy Patrick.
So there are a lot of parallels being drawn today or this morning between what Milley did and what Jim Schlesinger did in the final days of the Nixon presidency,
right,
where Nixon was walking around the White House drunk and sobbing, and they were concerned about what he might do. But after that, they did upgrade the 25th Amendment, and that was at our disposal. It is a shame. We shouldn't have to rely on our military leaders to save us from ourselves. That being said, I think Axios had the political website. Jonathan Swan writes for them. He has some good behind-the-scenes reporting, extra reporting on this. And he notes that Esper, the defense secretary, had sent back channel messages to China at the same time because there was grave concern that China was misreading what was happening, and they were concerned that China was preparing for a counterattack, thinking that the U.S. was going to attack them, and that there were real urgency between the U.S. and China in the back channel arena to make sure nothing like this happened. Milley's supposed to testify September 28th before the Senate Armed Services Committee. It's supposed to be about the Afghanistan withdrawal, but you can bet this is going to be the primary topic of conversation. And I love it because let's get more detail about what happened in those final days and what exactly prompted him to do the things he did.
Let's take a break. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to say very quickly, what you always have to do is imagine the worst possible case. Worst possible case is that it is discovered that the president, using his sole power to do this, wants to unleash a nuke onto China. Let's just say that's going on. Are you telling me that a chief military man, the chief of the Joint Chiefs, the head of the Joint Chiefs, shouldn't step in and do everything in their power to prevent the loss of millions of lives and the destruction of a good deal of America? Are you kidding?
And I don't. And it doesn't necessarily have to be true, right? I mean, even if you say that, I'll call you first. You're trying to calm him down, right?
And he was saying that they weren't going to do a sneak attack. Two
right.
points. One, I've never been in a formal meeting where the military weren't wearing their uniforms. Okay, so the idea of the reason he was in uniform was I take that off the table. The other point that I want everybody to remember is that Trump purposefully undermined the appointment process, and Congress went along with it, so that he had acting people in positions who weren't even confirmed. So even that in my mind was undermining Article 25, and that's something I know we need to go to break, but we should come back and have a conversation about.
We will do just that when we come back. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And we have a lot to talk about. We have been talking about a lot, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Bob, what were you wanted to bring to the floor? What?
The point that the Senate and Congress allowed Trump to put people in positions of power without going through the proper confirmation. So you had all of these acting positions, which in my mind was done purposefully to undermine any attempt to invoke an Article 25 movement to replace him. I mean, think about all of the acting positions that were in place on the 6th. I mean, actually, think about all of the positions in the cabinet that never even received a confirmed leader. I mean, so that this is actually another problem with the Article 25 of the Constitution that really needs to be addressed, so that the president can't undermine the overall democracy by just not following through and putting people for appointment. This also, Joe, is a problem with Congress. And, you know, in Congress has aided and abetted, particularly the Republicans, aided and abetted Donald Trump in undermining this country.
Rosemary.
Well, I agree with that, but there's a certain speciousness to your argument here that Milley was so naive, let's say, or blindly obedient that he goes marching off with Trump to run out protests and to, you know, that whole fiasco with George Floyd. And then suddenly he becomes so wise and intuitive about what Trump was doing that he could unilaterally take on the future of our relations with China. That's messed up too. And I go back to, you're right, it is Congress, and this was not a good Congress. They certainly did help Trump, but that's where the real fix is. There has to be a fix in the 25th Amendment, the recall of a president, if you will, and there has to be a fix in who gets to decide about war. And you're right about the declared wars too. You know, none of the wars we've had recently, not Iraq, not Afghanistan, those were not wars that got an act of Congress. And yet, would it not have been treason if Milley had done this in the middle of one of those wars? So it's all very, very blurred now, and everybody is playing by their own sets of rules. And that is dangerous. And you can't just decide what's right and wrong based on if you like Trump or not.
I think the last war that was the Tonkin Resolution for Vietnam, right? So I don't disagree with you. I think Congress has for decades now abridged their fiduciary responsibilities, and they are to fault. You are absolutely correct. And again, we can change that at the ballot box.
Let's go to some letters. No Way writes, I should point out, contrary to what Rosemary asserts, it is Congress that has the right to declare war. A preemptive nuclear strike is an act of war. We also go to Amanda. I agree with Rosemary. Whether you are Snowden or Milley, you suffer the slings and arrows of doing the right thing. Both could have a presidential pardon. Meanwhile, George checks in and says Rosemary is wrong. The USA is not at war with China, and the general did not commit treason. She might want to look up the definition, which is to make war against this country.
Okay, I specifically said if we were at war, which would have been the circumstances, I know the definition of treason, and if there were indeed a war brought by a wag the dog situation or whatever, we would have been at war, and it arguably would have been an act of treason for Milley to be talking in this back channel to the head of the enemy forces.
I don't think we
declare, Congress declares war anymore. Anyway, the last time Congress declared war was World War II, right? And we've been in plenty of wars.
Good point. Jim writes, Milley is but one person. One. How many others are willing to look the other way? The fact that no one has come out and say the information about Milley and the Pence-Quayle exchange is wrong, it's like the Republican establishment hears this, laughs, and says, that Trump, he's a real piece of work, and then ignores it. Remember, lots of Jewish people died before Hitler was seen as a monster. We go to...
Can I just say that I think the real hero so far of Peril, which I've not read, I don't think it's even out yet, is Dan Quayle, who up to now was known as the guy who couldn't spell potatoes. And now he's the one who talks sense to Pence, who that was heroic to stand up. He stood up against Trump. I know the Bushes hate him, and so that it came naturally to him. But he told Pence, knock it off. You can't do this. Don't get involved. And apparently that had an effect. So I was impressed by that.
I have to say that I agree with you, Rosemary. I mentioned it earlier in my remarks, which was that Quayle stood up to him, and Pence's really was disgusting. But Quayle did what was right, and it just shows you how our politics have evolved. You're so right.
Is it bad that when I first heard that story, the first thing I thought of, gee, I wonder who had his phone number? Go ahead, Bob.
No, I was just going to say, and this is something, there is another hero in this story, and it's the American press and Bob Woodward, and the fact that this is why we need to have a free and open press, because this is press is one of the most important elements in balancing government and power. And I know you talk about it all the time on the Media Project, but you know, keep talking about it, because the right of the press is how important they are is at play right here in this story.
General Milley is a reporter's dream, I think. There have been a number of books where he's clearly the source. I mean, there was the Phil Rucker, Carol Leanick book earlier in the summer where he was clearly the source. And that's not, you know, it's a dream, because he's the guy in a position of authority. He tells it like it is. And you can take what he says and they will confirm it any way they can, but he talks, and that's what you need.
We'll take a break when we come back. Go ahead, Rosemary.
One thing quickly, these are lovely speeches, and I would never be against anybody extolling the press, but Woodward is doing history, not journalism. These are all stories that should have come out in real time, and they didn't. And Milley, again, is not, he's all those things, but he's also a disgruntled employee, so you need to take it with a grain of salt.
Not me.
Well, you're a curmudgeon today.
I think we came up with the word dour yesterday. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, what'd you say, Rosemary?
I said also correct.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue.
Correct that we should allow a president of the United States to go out of control and send a missile if he wants to? I don't think so.
No, I think you were saying about dour, yes?
Yeah, dour.
Yeah. I don't know, okay. I guess we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. We do have a lot of letters. Let me get to as many as we possibly can, and then we'll move on to other stuff here. We begin with, Jim, who says, Colonel Vindman was a Democratic hero in 2020. Colonel Vindman has called for Milley to resign immediately for breaking the chain of command based on the actions reported in Woodward's book. Is Colonel Vindman mistaken?
No, I don't think he is mistaken. I think Milley did do the right thing, but I think it is time for him to step down. I just want to toss this at everybody, because I was thinking about this over the break. Could you imagine if Trump was able to put Michael Flynn in as the head of the military?
Mm-hmm. But why should he step down? You say he should step down.
I think for anybody who's in public service is that, you know, you've got to follow you have to follow your oath, and you know your oath is to, you know, obeying the laws of the country. And like in my situation, I left the federal government knowing that I couldn't work for Trump, but I wasn't going to stay there and not be able to carry out my duties. I don't think right now Milley can carry out his duties given everything that's come out. I think there's going to be a lack of faith in him, and it's probably better for everybody.
For what it's worth, I couldn't disagree more. I think he is truly an American hero. He had the guts to do what he had to do, and I think we all ought to appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I do. But at the same time, I think when you cross that line, though, Alan, it's time to step down.
All right. Okay. Let's go to, let's see, more letters here. We go to Judy. Rosemary, I think Milley did the right thing. And even though he went on that foray with Trump with the Bible, he acknowledged it was a mistake. His general pattern of behavior, however, has been admirable. People make mistakes. I think you have as well. We go to Joe. Judy and Joe, not us. We should broaden the discussion to include Trump and Biden's indiscriminate use of conventional warfare. Trump unilaterally bombed Syria and abandoned the Kurds to the hands of the Turks and Russians without congressional approval. None of their actions required unilateral and immediate decision. Our Constitution is over 250 years old and is dated. We need congressional and perhaps even plebiscite control of our military and diplomatic actions. Tristan says all soldiers are taught that they have an obligation to disobey unlawful orders. What the general did is not treason if he felt he was preventing the execution of an unlawful order. Mary said military do not need to follow unlawful orders. It is against military code in our and most other countries.
Can I point out he wasn't following any order? He was unilaterally on his own because of a worry about the president going to a potential enemy, saying, hey, if we're in a war situation, you can count on me. That's colluding with the enemy. At least it's arguably. It may indeed have been an act of heroism, as you're saying, in which case Vindman and what Bob just said right now is right. And he also has to have the courage to step down and say, I can't serve anymore. I did the right thing. Applaud me for it or not, but I stand by what I did, which, by the way, is what Vindman did.
You know, and the key word here is unlawful. How do you define, who gets to decide what's unlawful and what's not, or what's lawful? I would argue that Milley didn't do anything treasonous at this point, because it's not as if the Trump had ordered an assault and Milley had given the Chinese an unlawful heads up. That didn't happen. This is way, way before anything like that actually happened. He was just having a conversation.
Although he did say, Judy, that he would tell the Chinese if one was heading their way.
Well, it's true, but maybe that was just a strategic military tactic that he was saying, oh, don't worry, we're not going to attack you, and then he would have attacked him. I mean, I don't know how honorable military men are among themselves, but surprise attacks have happened in history.
I can't say one way or another how it would go, but I do think there's that Rubio is right. There is enough evidence here that he could have faced those charges. But for a minute, hypothetically, think if it were reversed, that if it were a Trump presidency following Biden and Trump were dealing with a Biden appointed general who I'm getting confused by my own comparison. What if it were that some general who thought that Biden was senile and unreliable, and he was colluding with, say, the North Koreans to say, hey, you know, don't worry, I won't let him get away with anything. How would we feel about it then when the politics are reversed? It can't depend on one person, even someone with a great valor and a long military history. They should not have the power that Milley tried to execute. It's dangerous, in the same way that Trump doing crazy things in the presidency was dangerous.
Well, see, I take a different view, of course, respectfully, and that is that if he saved millions of lives, if he assembled the Joint Chiefs together, if he said to them, listen, we're not going to launch one here, he must have known a great deal and about what Trump's intentions were. I have great respect for the Woodward book, and I think, and for his journalism, and I think this is a time when we can't just say one size fits all. You're absolutely right. If it had been a different situation, it would have been a different situation. But right now, with this madman who was once in office and facing the situation that we have all seen, I don't think Milley did anything but gain my respect.
And a point I made earlier, Joe, is that, you know, as much as we talked about it on the show and continue to talk about the insurrection on the show, you know, it's interesting to hear Rubio talk about traitors, because he certainly has, he has done nothing about the insurrection. But it shows how the rest of the world was shaken by this. This just what which wasn't the roundtable panels or folks in New York. The whole world was holding its breath, not knowing what was happening. This will go down in history as scary as the Cuban Missile Crisis and certainly the World War as how close we came to potential catastrophe.
Joel,
and they keep getting passes on it, and they keep getting a pass on it. The Republicans joke about how it was just normal tourists in D.C.
Joel writes to us and says what Milley did was profoundly wrong for profoundly right reasons. The issue is the vital danger of an unfit president. Time to name names of those who continue to enable this dangerously rogue president. The peril story is not history; it is now. We got this.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we got this from Kathleen. Wouldn't it make sense for Congress to pass legislation saying that Congress needs to be involved in the decision to make a first strike, but the executive branch could respond to an attack if necessary? It seems like a solution.
I don't think so, because it will always be in the minds of the interpreter, right? So if they say we were having a crisis here, and we thought that they were going to attack us, and so we sent a nuke their way. It gets messy.
Yeah, the Woodward book talks about how Trump was getting crazier and crazier, I think is the expression that they used, after the election. And I would like more details about that, and I hope that comes out in congressional hearings or investigations, because just generally telling me that doesn't give me enough information to judge for myself. Was he really deteriorating, or wasn't he?
Well, that was what we were hearing that at the time. I mean, the Times and the Post were all reporting that he was just sitting in his bathrobe in the Oval Office, just sort of, you know, seething, and people were trying to, you know, divert his attention with other things. I don't know. I mean, it seemed like we were getting those reports at the time.
Let's see what the book says.
I'd like to see the transcripts of the phone calls he was making and who he was talking to now, and what was Ivanka doing? What was Jared doing? You know,
Ivanka doing?
Details beyond the bathrobe, although that's a good detail too.
Yeah, it is.
Is anybody else having a Steve Martin flashback to the jerk?
Yes.
About the bathrobe?
Yes.
I'll just let that sit.
With his the dog except wasn't available.
Except this one has his finger on the button.
True.
Glenn writes, General Milley was afraid China would preemptorily attack the U.S. His intent, I believe, was to reassure China that things were under control here, so that would not happen. There is no foul play here, writes Keith, as stated this morning by Mark Hertling, Lieutenant General Mark Hertling, who held the same position. It is standard practice for generals to maintain communications with their counterparts of both allies and potential enemies without asking permission from the White House. Then we go to this letter. What was the specific behavior in the final days of the last presidency that triggered the alarm of people like General Milley and Speaker Pelosi described in the new book, Peril? I think this is to your point, Judy. Beyond inciting the attack on the Capitol to stop the peaceful transfer of power, the authors apparently refer to manic and unhinged behavior by the former president. Would like to know details of that in order to judge the reaction of the people around him.
Got to read the book.
Richard says, if one looks at the county by county, I think we're back to, are we here? Are we to California now? No. Fred writes, thank God for General Milley. Would there were more such heroes throughout history in the governments of tyrants and dictators. Trump was then and is now trying to push a self-centered right-wing coup and is surrounded and enabled by the cowards and hypocrites in his party. By all rights, he should have been deposed through the 25th Amendment, if not sooner. Certainly at the time of the January 6th insurrection, Trump and his minions are the traitors, an ongoing threat to our democracy, and he is insane. Milley was righteous, even if his actions prove technically illegal. His righteous actions need to be recognized by the Biden administration. And though the general may need to go, he should get a blanket pardon from Biden if any of his actions prove to have been illegal.
And Joe, I hope everybody listening remembers that we have actually members of the congressional delegation in New York in our area who have supported and apologized for Trump. And I certainly hope everybody remembers that at the election time.
Who would you be meaning?
He doesn't want to say, but it rhymes with refranic.
Yes.
Dave writes, it will be a mistake to extrapolate the California recall vote to the 2020 midterm. I believe the results would be different if California were a purple state or certainly a red state.
That certainly could be true. Mm. The fact that a lot of people were expecting the blue state to, and they had polls that they said proved it, and that this was going to be a realigning, what the political scientists call realigning election, that we're going to realign things, and California was going to go red. Well, it sure as hell did not.
I think we're getting to the bottom of the pile here, but Richard says, not in the quality, but just time-wise, Richard says, if one looks at the county-by-county results in California of the recall election, it's clear that while Newsom prevailed along the coast and in the cities, the results inland are in far north, where there is a growing and bitter conflict over water usage, were just as stark in the opposite direction. In this sense, California is a microcosm of the U.S. overall, with clear implications for the next national elections. There is not going to be any retreat by the Trumpistas, and the electoral outcomes in the battleground states of Miami, Florida, Michigan.
Joe, of upstate New York. I mean, let's face it, you say, well, you know, California is basically blue, but there's some red parts. There sure as heck are here, too.
Correct.
It's interesting, though, is that the red parts are where there's no people or very few people. And this is every time I see those comparisons, like, you know, they show the map of where Trump won versus Biden. Look how much land he won. Yeah, that's not where the people are. The people are in the cities. They're on the coast. So he lost.
The other thing, too, is they were doing at the big wall last night on CNN as they were focusing in on some of the, as John King was focusing in on some of those counties where indeed they were red. When you looked at the numbers, they were also really close. It was like 52-48 kind of thing, as opposed to the blue sections, which were, you know, like 80-20. So that is worth mentioning as well, I think. We go to this letter in regards to something Rosemary brought up at the beginning of the program about the mute button that was brought up by the senator when talking to the Secretary of State yesterday. If there was a button to mute the president, the Republicans would have been wise to use it for Trump. We go to Bob, who wrote, "We came within one general and a few patriots of losing our democracy last January 6th. California's overwhelming endorsement of the Democratic Party yesterday is revealing to the Republicans what may be coming in 2022. Hold on to your hats. It's going to be a cry fest for about a week."
What did that mean? In other words, the cry fest would be what?
The Republicans crying, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know about that. I'll tell you right now, there are an awful lot of red states in this country. They have an enormous amount of electoral college power. I think this is going to be an iffy election, and I do truly expect that Trump is going to run for office again.
And perhaps our most important letter of the morning comes from Robert, who says, in response to people who will write Alan letters saying to him that the mosquitoes were here before him, that is wrong. The lifespan of a mosquito is 49 days. I am very confident that Alan has been around far more than that.
Very funny.
All right, that wins. Yeah. That's the winner.
Pretty good one. All right. Let's move on to other stuff and talk about other issues this morning. We've gotten to a lot, but let's let us continue. This issue of mandates, I think, continues to be interesting. The White House considered requiring vaccines for international air travelers. That was shelved. But top White House officials say that proposal and similar ones are still under consideration, including potentially a broader vaccine mandate that would include domestic air travel. As White House officials rushed to shape last week's sweeping new vaccine mandates, they debated the idea of requiring international air travelers to be vaccinated before boarding a plane as part of a larger effort to persuade more Americans to get immunized, according to two people familiar with those plans. Some aides argued that other countries already require vaccinations to fly and that the United States should join their ranks, according to an administration official. But others said mandates work best when they require people to prove they are immunized only once, like at work, rather than repeatedly, like every time they board a plane. That from The Washington Post. But I think we should take from this, too, that more mandates are being thought of. And I also want to just bring in and give me 2 seconds to properly find it. But I also want to bring in the story that the federal judge who blocked medical workers in New York. I think this was out of Utica. Am I right on that, folks?
Yes,
out of Utica. That a federal judge blocked the state of New York from on Tuesday from forcing medical workers to be vaccinated.
And the Clinton appointee,
it was for religious reasons, though. It was for religious reasons, not overall, right.
Saying their constitutional rights were violated because the state's mandate disallowed religious exemptions. It was Judge David Hurd in Utica who issued the order after 17 health professionals, including doctors and nurses, claimed in the lawsuit Monday that their rights were violated with a vaccine mandate that disallowed the exemptions. So a whole lot there. I throw it to you, Alan, first.
Well, first of all, it should be mentioned, I was told yesterday or today that the judge is a Clinton appointee. So that's something. And although he didn't do what I would have liked to see him do. But when you think about it, when it gets to the Supreme Court on the basis of religious exemption, you know what those people are going to do. So, am I for vaccinating everybody? Am I for mandating vaccinations? Yes, I am.
Judy Patrick.
Right. I think the ruling was based on the fact that the law doesn't allow for a religious exemption, and a lot of mandates do allow, even for basic childhood vaccinations. I think there are some religions that really do object to this. The problem is that anybody who actually can claim a religious exemption for, they may not belong to a church, but in their hearts, you know, for their own morality, they think that they need an exemption. So that is a real troubling perspective on that, especially as this heads further. But I'd like to say that mandates work, and I'm all in favor of mandating airline passengers have vaccinations. They talk about the logistical problems. Hey, I've got my Excelsior pass, and I think every state needs to adopt a similar approach to verifying that you've been vaccinated. I've heard way too many stories of people carrying around fake vaccine cards. I mean, that's too much of a problem. We need to address it with a system like the Excelsior pass, which I think works well.
Bob?
I agree with you, Judy. I think that the federal government controls air travel, and I do think that they should have put a mandate in. I find it interesting that they don't want to check the card, your vaccination card, but they're going to check your license. I mean, so this idea of we only want to check once. Well, if that's the case, then you should just take DMV's word for it and not have to look at my license. So I hope that they put it in. You know, the other thing, it's a long tube with not the greatest flow of air. I would feel a lot safer if everybody on the flight had to be vaccinated.
Rosemary.
So I think that they should rewrite the law and it should have a religious exemption in, recognizing it that not many religions say, thou shalt not have a COVID shot. There's what, Christian Scientists? So put their exemption in, because the Republicans, the conservatives are right that the Supreme Court will support, our current Supreme Court will support any claim on religious freedom. I think they're right in that. So if you want to keep the mandate in, then exempt people who truly have religious compulsive compulsiveness not to get it. It's the same way that the liberals, in trying to force the mandates through, are not talking about everybody. It's not talking about civilians like us feeling safe. It's talking about people who are disabled and have no choice, because disability is also another special group that will have an appeal to the Supreme Court. I think this is all basically legal maneuvering, and so get smart and do your mandate so that they can face a legal challenge.
All right, we're going to pause there and take a break. When we come back, we will continue and wrap up our conversation with our group this morning, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and Bob Griffin. We welcome your letters, as always, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC, and we would love to hear from you. Keep your letters short and to the point, and we can get to as many as possible, as we do get a lot. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this break and news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our program this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and Bob Griffin all make up our panel, and we welcome you. We've got about 15 minutes left, and we will try to get to as many topics as we can in that time period. Let us go to this story. Let's try that again. Let's go to this story from the New York Times. The Justice Department asking judge to block Texas's restrictive abortion law. The department sued Texas last week over its recently enacted law, which prohibits nearly all abortions in the state. The Justice Department asked a federal judge late yesterday to issue an order that would prevent Texas from enforcing a law that prohibits nearly all abortions, ratcheting up a fight between the Biden administration and the state's Republican leaders. The Justice Department argued in its emergency motion that the state adopted the law known as Senate Bill 8 to prevent women from exercising their constitutional rights, reiterating an argument the department made last week when it sued Texas to prohibit enforcement of the contentious new legislation. Rosemary.
Yes, Joe. I'm in favor of this. I wish Merrick Garland were on the Supreme Court. He's got a good legal mind. This is more legal maneuvering. I think it's a long shot whether he'll get this through. Don't forget that the case that he has brought will ultimately go in front of the same Supreme Court justices who decided that the law could go into effect while it's being debated at a lower level. So I don't have a lot of hope for it, but he's gamely fighting.
Judy Patrick.
Yeah, I agree with Rosemary. I don't have a lot of hope for it. And meanwhile, in Texas, they keep on passing anti-abortion laws. This one that's winding its way through their legislature now. At this point, people in Texas, women in Texas, can get these day-after pills up to 10 weeks of their, up to 10 weeks of gestation. Now they want to change that to 7, and that is looking like that's going to get approved. Meanwhile, you've got states, conservative driven states, especially in the West, are following Texas's lead and enacting laws that will make it harder and harder for women, especially poor women, to control what's going to happen with their reproductive systems. What's happening is really troubling. We'll see what the Justice Department can do in Texas, but the more troubling or the more concerning case is that Mississippi case that the Supreme Court's going to consider, and that deals essentially, doesn't it deal with the viability when you determine viability, and they want it to start at 15 weeks instead of, I think now a lot of it is at 24. The idea that viability starts, you can debate the morality here about these heartbeat bills, that as soon as you see a heart, and that's what the Texas law is based on. We've been over this plow ground many times, and I think the Supreme Court in Roe versus Wade made a decision on this, and let's abide by it.
Bob Griffin.
Yeah, I think if anybody thinks that these aren't the continued steps towards trying to roll back all contraceptive rights, I think you're wrong. I think this is going to be a continual drumbeat, and it's not going to stop with the Texas case. Joe, I was thinking about it over the weekend, and I wish that someplace like New York or California would pass similar language, but about insurrectionists. So give us the ability to go in and sue folks that may have supported, abetted an insurrection against the government.
Alan?
Yeah, you know, I'm watching John Roberts here. As you know, he dissented from the majority opinion in the abortion case at the Supreme Court. And I'm not so sure he won't now take a look at these people, although we know that they were appointed just for this reason. Shake his finger at them, and I tell you, you are bringing the Supreme Court and the prestige of the Supreme Court down. And, you know, it would be my hope, although I suspect unfounded hope, that when it gets to the Supreme Court, wiser heads may prevail.
Oh, dream on. No. He's in a 5-4 minority now. Even if we were to vote every time with the liberals, he's still outnumbered by a majority that's not just conservative, but they care. These are people who care more about stopping abortion, about overturning Roe v. Wade, than about the reputation of the Supreme Court. Amy Coney Barrett was out on the Speaker's circuit this weekend talking about, I'm going to convince you that the Supreme Court's not about partisan politics. She actually was laughed at. And that is her, that occurs for years. Alito and Williams are just loving this. You are not going to see the Supreme Court pull back from this. I think that pro-abortion groups and feminists need to be planning right now for what we do when Roe v. Wade is no longer the law of the land after 50 years, when your constitutional right to abortion, it does not exist, and when contraception is also difficult to get. And it's going to be money and new elections.
Well, you're probably right about everything you're saying. It sounds ridiculous to think that the court, in order to preserve its honor, will do the right thing here. And I agree with every word you've said, Rosemary, here. But I do think that there is an outside chance that in order for the Supreme Court to hold its head up and to be able to raise its prestige, they may. But you're probably right. You're probably right.
Bob?
Yeah, I saw Barrett's comments over the weekend, and I thought it was absolutely laughable. And it's I don't know who she was trying to convince herself or the dupes around her, but I mean, she has practiced nothing what she's preached. It's also, I'll go back to the drumbeat about the 2022 election, that this is why we all need to stay involved and to help fund the campaigns to make sure that Congress doesn't flip.
Judy? And, you know, women's organizations around the country are planning marches on October 2nd. So we'll see what kind of turnout we get, or what the nation sees on October 2nd, whether or not this is an issue that is making men and women get out and make their voices heard about what's happening in this realm.
We've got about 5 minutes left, and I just want to go to a couple of letters here that we have. I'm wondering if you know why there is no discussion about including resolve cases on a vaccine passport. Some European countries are including this. There is growing evidence, including a recent study out of Israel, showing that people who have had COVID are 13 times more protected against breakthrough cases and variants. I'm wondering why, if it is so black and white, why it is so black and white when resolve cases are clearly a part of and a stronger piece of the herd. Bob, do you want anything on that?
I was kind of struggling with the letter, Joe. Could you sort of summarize what
I'm wondering if you know why there is no discussion about including resolved cases on a vaccine passport, meaning even if you have been vaccinated, that you should then also include information that you have had a case and it has been quote unquote resolved.
Yeah, I really don't know, but I had seen similar work. I thought the report that I saw though was domestic and not from Israel, but we are starting to see, we are starting to see the beginning of developments of herd immunity. I don't know how you would actually track that. That's what I was sort of struggling with. I mean, you'd still have to go to a doctor to get that information. So it's an interesting letter. I don't think the letter writer is incorrect. I just don't know how you do it.
Anthony writes to us and says, if taking the vaccine does not stop, that in shouty caps, you from getting COVID and you can still get COVID and pass it on, isn't making the vaccine mandatory moot? My brother got it after being vaccinated for 3 months and still has to get the same treatment that I needed. Mask wearing should be mandated.
Well, certainly that last part is correct. There ought to be an awful lot of mandates in schools and in the public and the rest. But, you know, I also think that you got to look at the statistics. You know, it isn't that people who have been, who have gotten the shots and done all this have not been seen, not been able to get the disease. It's the question of how many get the disease. And that's what I'm thinking.
In the severity too, right, Helen? I mean, it's also proven that, you know, mortality rate for folks that were vaccinated versus unvaccinated is really, really different. And, you know, if you look at your ICU counts right now, the huge majority that are in ICU are folks that have not been vaccinated. So that also plays a role in it. The vaccine, no vaccine actually ever makes you bulletproof or in this case, I guess, virus proof. But what it does is that it buys down your risk. It buys down the risk of severity and therefore it buys down the risk to everybody else.
Hmm. All right. One more letter and then we're going to go. Robert says fake vaccine. I have to go because I only have until 11 o'clock to get my flu shot while we're talking about vaccines. they're offering them right next door, and I want to get them before the nurse leaves. Robert says fake vaccine cards are the fault of the CDC by having such poor documentation. Why not provide a credit card type card with vaccine information that can be verified with ID information to prove the correct person is using it? Yet it would be a hassle and a paperwork nightmare, but the little paper cards are pathetic. FYI, not everyone has a smartphone for an Excelsior Pass. The other thing I've noticed about the Excelsior Passes, Judy, and I agree with you that they're great. No one ever scans them, though. They just look at them, which it's just a barcode. And I wish somebody would actually, like, scan it so they could see the information that is wired within that.
Right. I think the state government did one half of the program, but they didn't do the other half of the program.
I don't think they gave everybody the little scanners. Because all it says... Yeah, go ahead.
And remember, some of us live in other states, like
right.
Massachusetts, and they don't have that Excelsior card.
Very few states do.
And I just got my booster, and they wrote it in ballpoint pen and attached it on the outside saying, you know, that I had the third shot.
So now we're using post-it notes, right?
I can imagine what that's going to do.
Yeah, it looks official. All right, everybody, thank you very much for being a part of the program. Alan Chartok, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Rosemary, Judy, and Bob, thank you. We'll be back.
Good luck with the shot, Joe.
Thank you very much. We'll be back with the Congressional Corner right after this.